It's part magic show, part spook house, part true crime drama. Play Dead, now at the Players Theater on McDougal Street, can only be described as an all-around entertainment. The shrieking in the audience is continuous, and sometimes it's difficult to tell whether it's caused more by terror or by glee. This evening of magic and mayhem is a collaborative creation conceived by Todd Robbins, its principal performer, and Teller, the show's director, and it is my pleasure to welcome them to our show, thankfully in broad daylight, to talk about this creepy and wonderful show that they put together. Teller, have you found someone to team up with who'll let you get in a word edgewise?
Well, Todd's,
you know, it's funny you should mention
pretty continuous. Yeah, Todd's a pretty continuous talker. That's why I'm in the director role.
Well, people love horror movies and roller coasters. Why do you think they enjoy being scared so much?
Well, we say it kind of early on in the show that you're never so alive as when you're scared to death. And that's really, this is a very much a show that is about death. It is a celebration of life.
There's a certain erotic thrill, you know, when you feel that shiver of terror. It's rather akin to sex, isn't it?
It's also letting loose, isn't it? We struggle so hard to keep ourselves under control, and here suddenly we feel like we have lost a certain amount of control.
Yeah, we're liberated in the dark. We're liberated in the darkness by not being watched, although that's only what the audience thinks. There are secret eyes in the dark watching them just to make sure that nothing really terrible happens.
You're scaring me. You have to allow yourself to be hypnotized. Is that also true of magic, or do you trick people against their wills?
Well, it's very much a suspension of disbelief.
But it's an unwilling suspension of disbelief. Where a regular theater, you say, okay, I'm willing to pretend that stick is a sword. When you're seeing that something that's related to magic, it has to look like a sword. It has to look like it's really going through the person. So part of the glee of this show is that, well, at one point, we do invite an audience member up, have him lie in a large metal vat. And then Todd beats him to death with a crowbar, and then covers him with acid, dissolves his body, and pours the remains into a grave in the stage. And throughout, you know, you'd think the audience would be going, oh my God, but of course not. They know that it's not really happening, but the joy is they know it's not happening, and it seems for all the world to be happening, and they laugh.
They laugh and applaud.
That's
because they've been misdirected? Is that how you do it? You distract them?
No, it's not this. I mean, you engineer the appearance of a different reality for them. In other words, in this particular case, we invented a brand new magic trick that had never, ever been seen before on stage.
That still can be done?
Yes.
But it's a variation on an older magic trick, I assume.
Honestly, I mean, unless you say that a person going away is a traditional magic trick. And a person going away is a traditional magic
trick.
Disappearing. But it's never been done like this before, not even remotely.
Can you describe it?
Well, I think I just did.
That's the one where you...
Yes, we invite an audience member up and...
There are a number of moments in the show that we've created magical effects, which are basically magic tricks or stories. And we've created these little mini stories that have a beginning, middle, and end. A guy gets into a vat, is bludgeoned to death, dissolved with acid, and then his remains are dumped into a pit, and we go on with the show. And it doesn't really have an ending, which is what is so kind of disarming about the whole thing and gets people on edge, as we do with so many things in the show.
You don't just immediately present him.
Oh, no.
He's dead after all.
There's no ta-da moment at the end of it, which is, I think, what makes people laugh. Some are just enjoying what we've just done. And the novelty of it.
And his wife is relieved, probably.
I mean, and there was a woman I, you know, looked at her and I said, well, you've experienced loss. She said, I've got insurance. It's okay. It's okay.
What's the history of shows like this? Who did them? I mentioned that there were mid-20th century, which isn't all that long ago, tradition.
The shows like this is maybe an exaggeration. This show comes out of a great American tradition called the spook show that started around 1930 and started when live performance was waning and movies were coming in. And certain magicians found that if they booked a movie theater at midnight on Saturday night, well, it was a very cheap venture for them. But the perfect audience for midnight on Saturday night was teenagers out for a thrill. And so these things were teenage thrill shows. And that's a that was sort of part of the foundation of what we wanted to do with the show, but we wanted to do it for sophisticated New York adults. Mm. You know, we wanted to do it so that it wouldn't be a gross out. It wouldn't just be people screaming in the dark, although it is both of those things. We wanted to do something that actually had some substance and some theatrical
content. And many of these, the early shows, the spook shows, were pretty cheesy. They were kind of high on shock and even higher on schlock.
Yeah.
And we wanted to sort of take that idea of what they were trying to do and just ramp it up to make it into a New York theater show.
Well, you originally tried this out in Las Vegas, didn't you?
We developed it over the course of three workshops in Las Vegas, which we had to, that had to be our location because I run a show there 46 mm-hmm. weeks a year, the Penn and Teller show at The Rio. And so it wasn't really possible for me to come out here for prolonged periods of time. So we did first a very short version, a half-hour version, just to test out what people's reactions would be in a theater to being plunged into darkness and having weird apparitions fly around them, you know, luminous bats flying over them and translucent apparitions walking by them. And then we did a second version out there where we were now dealing with a more full-length performance. And it was during that one that we began to really explore the serious under theme of the show, which is how do you react to death? You know, is death merely something that you deny and despair over, or is there a joy that you can get out of realizing that death makes life precious? And that's the real theme of the show underlying it all is that it's death that gives the verve to life. It's death that makes it important to live life to the fullest.
Do audiences in Las Vegas who are sometimes committing suicide economically, do they react differently than New York audiences?
To our great surprise, we thought New York audiences were going to be very staid. We thought they were going to be these very sophisticated, reserved theater goers who, if you plunged them into the darkness, would sit and wait for you to show them. Well, no. You plunge them into the darkness, and they just go wild. Yeah. And it's great fun.
Yeah. The show is structured that we sort of set up the beginning of it to transmute them from being jaded New Yorkers to being teenagers in the dark grabbing each other and holding on for dear life.
Although there are claustrophobic people out there probably freaking out.
We have advisories up in the lobby saying if you are claustrophobic, if you have a fear of darkness, if you're recently bereaved, and if you have children that are underage, this is not the show for you. And the irony of it is, in the old days, the old spook shows had these big hypes. They would say, oh, you know, it'll scare the yell out of you. And if you're in the family way, if you have a heart condition, or if you're nervous, you shouldn't come to see Dr. Ogre Banshee's Chasm of Spasms. Because ghost hands will reach out in the dark and touch you. And
sounds like you work both sides.
I love this stuff. I mean, I love the, you know, it's like a foodie that occasionally enjoys going to McDonald's. And
since you mentioned that, in a moment, I want to ask you about eating light bulbs.
Sure,
because that doesn't sound like a very foodie thing. But go ahead.
So the thing about it is that we wanted to sort of put them in that mindset that this was, the show is called Play Dead, and play is half of that title. And needed to put them in the right mindset. So that's really what the opening of the show is all about.
And my guests are Todd Robbins, the principal performer in Play Dead, and Teller, who directed it. It's currently at the Players Theater on McDougal Street. Well, let's start off. You start off with a more typical kind of magic trick, or can I even call it a trick? Is that a real light bulb you eat at the beginning of the show? Tom?
Yes. It's a wonderful old sideshow stunt that I learned years ago. And you can call it a trick if you also refer to like a triple somersault on a trapeze as a trick. There's no deception to it.
But you're eating glass?
Yeah, I am
eating
glass.
Isn't your intestine have problems with that? Your stomach and then other parts of your body?
I know what I'm doing, and I've done more than...
This is not one of those things you should try at home?
No, not at all. I learned it from an old guy. I was very fortunate to learn a lot of the old sideshow stunts from what was the last generation of true sideshow professionals, old-timers that made their living performing in carnivals and circuses. And they taught me the techniques that allowed them to do this up to 30 times a day.
That's a lot of glass.
That's a lot of glass. And
have any nutritional value?
No, it tastes like chicken, but you know, I've got all the lines and everything. But it's a wonderful thing that we do right after that first dark room, and it grabs people in a very good way.
And people flinch when they hear the glass crunching.
Oh, yeah.
There's a fair amount of audience participation here. How do you pick your volunteers? Are you more likely to pick somebody who's young, pretty, and female?
Well, it's mostly a very quick read. I'm going down in the audience, and I've really got just a second or two of looking around and just spotting the right person that I think is going to be, because I know what I need up there. And for each and everything that we do, we need a different kind of person. So I go down and try not to look out beforehand and look at the audience and go, oh, that person would be good, because invariably that just backfires terribly. Or I have people that say, oh, you know, I'm going to be at the show. Can you use me? Or my uncle is coming. Can you use? And that's just – it's disastrous.
And people don't suspect that you have shills out there?
Oh, they do. They do, because it's amazing what people – just average – New Yorkers will do when a guy, a tall guy in a white bloody suit, will walk up to them and say, come with me and stand here and do this. It's amazing what they will do.
Mm. And it is, it's amazing. Some of the things that we have people do, anyone else, I believe, in the world would use Stooges for.
Mm-hmm.
But we sort of made ourselves a rule at the beginning that we wanted everybody who leaves that theater to be able to say to their friends, yeah, it really happened to me. And that's what we got.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most bracing effects of Play Dead, and it's remarkable, but it's not magic, is when you turn out all the lights and then disconnect the exit signs as well. I don't know whether the fire department likes that idea, but the darkness gets a tremendous reaction.
You don't have much of experience of real darkness in the modern world.
And, especially in New York.
And especially you don't have that experience with other people. So this communal thing of being plunged into the darkness is a kind of a joyful and really primal experience that makes some people just scream automatically, makes other people misbehave in delightful ways. It's a great laugh and scream.
Oh, yeah.
Then you do things like you pull somebody's guts out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is?
Is that the same technique that's done in Brazil and mm-hmm. the Philippines called psychic surgery?
That's exactly right.
You know, part of what we're doing throughout this show is we're taking things that are used for evil in the real world, like supposedly psychic readings, like, you know, all of the fraudulent people who pretend to talk to the dead. We're taking those things and we're doing them honestly as tricks, admitting their tricks, but still feeling the amazement and power that those things can evoke.
And you're not the only magician who really thinks it's important to debunk those kinds of practices, like contacting the dead. You engage in it and then you also debunk it. You want us to know that what you're doing is definitely an art rather than something mm-hmm. mystical.
But we need to do it to you, you know, as an audience. We need to really deliver that to you so that you realize yourself that you, if we weren't telling you the truth, you could be terribly vulnerable to this kind of thing. So there's this sort of slight little white moral flag that we're carrying to remind people that when you've lost somebody, you become really vulnerable to bad people.
And you really have no idea how vulnerable you are, what a complete back door you have into your emotions that is just there and open for the right person.
Do you think the popular culture plays into all of this? Have you seen Clint Eastwood's movie Hereafter?
I haven't seen Hereafter yet, but
they say there are some charlatans out there, but there are also some people who have a real gift.
Well, that's cute.
That's not true. No one has a real gift. Period. End of story. If somebody has a real gift, I recommend they contact the James Randi Educational Foundation.
Right, yes.
They can win. Right. I think it's $2 million right
now. He used to carry around a check for $10,000. It keeps on going up.
Yeah, but it's beyond the money. It's beyond the money. It's the fact is that if the James Randi Educational Foundation says you are legit and proclaims that to the world, this changes the way we look at the world.
One of my producer's sons saw a magician take a watch off a man's arm and put it on his own without the man feeling anything, and his reaction was, why doesn't he just become a thief? You're capable of doing all those things, picking people's pockets, taking rings off their fingers.
Yeah, he's a much better artist than a thief would be. You know, with a thief, there's no declaration that there's about to be a crime committed. The thief takes you by surprise. The theatrical performer says, I'm about to commit a crime. Look, I did. And it's a very honest experience, which means that, you know, you have to be more of an artist to do it for the theater.
When you're watching another magician at work, can you pretty much spot what's going on?
Most of the time, yes. Sometimes with very sophisticated sleight of hand, I will be fooled. I'll generally know the principles involved. But one of my great joys about this show is that John Gaughan, who was the person who devised the flying effect that David Copperfield used to do in his show, extraordinary magical inventor, came to our show and was fooled by several things and wrote joyfully to me afterwards, because for a magician, the most joyful experience you could possibly have is to be fooled.
Now, I'm assuming that you have other things planned after the show closes. First of all, is this an open run?
Yes, it is. Well, my plan is...
Well, you know, the Blue Man Group is still going.
Well, I plan on doing the show for 30 years and turning it over to my son, who's currently 2.5, and who can actually do large hunks of the show, having seen it a number of times. Yes, just yesterday, he came up to me and said, Daddy, I need to get dead out of you. Like, what was that? I need to get dead out of you. And he performed psychic surgery on me. You know, kind of a play version of it, but he had all the beats there.
I'm scared to have any kids thinking about the kids in his class when he goes to kindergarten. Play Dead is at the Players Theater on McDougal Street. And my great thanks to Todd Robbins, its principal performer, and to Teller, who is the director. It's been a lot of fun talking with you.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.